So how and when are the logging regulations in Victoria changing?
Yeah, so the announcement last week was that the moratorium on native logging of forests in Victoria would come forward to December this year, or the end of, cease at the end of the year, effectively, coming forward from 2030, which is when it was originally proposed. So it's a significant change for the forests of Victoria.
Have First Nation voices been a part of the conversation regarding these new changes so far?
Look, I think there's been it's been alluded to in some of the commentary that this, you know, has the potential to be significant for First Nations peoples across Victoria, but it, you know, to the extent that I've seen, it really hasn't been at the forefront of the conversations, and it really really needs to, and hence why I'm keen to advocate on the path on that issue and make space for First Nations voices to be heard, noting that the government has suggested that an advisory committee to advise on the use of these lands moving forward would be established, and that seems like a fitting place to have strong representation of First Peoples.
How would First Nations management benefit forests and people, and what would the management look like?
I think it's an excellent question that I'm not going to answer particularly well, largely because it's really around self-determination. And so each nation needs to lead that conversation on their behalf, I think, Jono. And you know, forest management and the vision for forests that First Nations people will be different depending on their culture and their circumstance. And I think, I guess what I'm advocating is to give the mobs themselves the choice to hold that space and articulate their vision for forests across Victoria into the future.
How should First Nations people be empowered to manage forests? Should we see state funding models come in? Should we see employment models come in? How do you think, obviously, individual determination for each peoples is going to be really important, but how would you advise the state approach empowering these peoples?
Well, I think therein lies the opportunity, doesn't it? This is a significant change to the way we manage forests. I guess the exciting part is that because of that, there's an opportunity to empower First Nations people to lead the management of these forests and how they'll look. So again, I'll refer to the previous point. It needs to be led by those individual nations to assert their obligation and rights to managing and caring for forests. And really this is about healthy country. So the mobs will, in general, be looking to restore country to good health. And country incorporates both the physical landscape, which we're probably alluding to mostly today, but it also embodies cultural and spiritual connection to country and Mother Earth. And so that has to be part of the story, and the space needs to be given for that. Now, I think there's a whole lot of probably physical things that we can imagine in some instances are going to be required. For instance, we have, you know, a process called thickening, or, you know, referred to thickening sometimes, of really high density trees and shrub landscapes across a lot of our forests. And we can see, you know, I can see a real opportunity for some of that to be remediated as part of that process. And potentially there are strong economic opportunities for First Nations group across Victoria to take advantage of some of those opportunities.
What are some risks associated with thickening? And could you describe what thickening is for those not in the know?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's about the density of the trees and the size of the trees and the shrub layer. So I guess, you know, first colonizers described again and again the landscape as being park-like 230-odd years ago. Few but very large trees, often a grassy understory. And I'm generalizing here. There are really distinct forest types across Victoria and Australia, and some of them were wet forests and probably very rarely managed, although they certainly were. But we really have sort of turned the corner on that, and we now have lots and lots of young recovering forests, recovering from interventions such as forest harvest, but also increasing frequency and intensity of bushfire. And that leaves us with these dense stands, you know, of high density trees and also shrubs that have a potential for high high intensity wildfire in the summer months. So more likely to crown at landscape level and start to create their own weather and patterns of fire spread when the conditions are right. So these young forests are a real risk. One of the things that we think will be critical, and we're certainly not advocates that we need to be in managing and doing things physically to well-established, you know, wet, temperate forests, but we do need to actively manage them by ensuring that the country surrounding them isn't a tinderbox, or we'll lose them as well.
Mm. And how can the listeners at home help advocate for an Indigenous voice in the management of these native landscapes?
It's probably a really general answer to that. In the same way they can advocate for Indigenous voices everywhere, make space for it and ensure it's being heard in all conversations, I think is probably a key, Jono.